critical finds, if you will. Now your chance to sleep is greatly diminished. He found the button. Okay? So as we move forward with this evening, I want to kind of set a background. I'm going to change the approach to this just a little bit. I hope it will prove to be beneficial. It was beneficial for me in preparation. We're eventually going to get to the Good Samaritan story. And I'm going to take for granted that a good portion of you, if not the vast majority, if not everyone, are very familiar with this story. And that the background information may prove to be just a little bit beneficial as we try to enrich our learning in this topic of mercy, which is where we're at tonight. Excavation, as I mentioned, is a very involved process. And I would like to make our application tonight in the form of construction, not necessarily archaeological finds. Sometimes for a construction process for a new structure to take place, old structures have to be removed. They no longer meet the requirements. And as a matter of fact, some of those old institutions, buildings in a construction application, may be in the way of growth. They may be standing in the way of a new foundation that's twice as strong. Who knows? Maybe several times stronger. Maybe something newer, a newer structure that has a better utility, better efficiency, better effectiveness. Of course, you understand the scriptural and spiritual applications. I'll try to make that tonight. Man-made structures may need to be removed, allow proper use of the site per the plan. If rock is encountered, it must be addressed. Removal of rock in a construction process is a very burdensome and labor-intensive process, and it's expensive. And it's an intensive process. But in order for that new structure to go in place, be it an interstate highway or a building, if that rock is in the way and it's disruptive for the excavating process, including the foundation, it must be addressed. Oftentimes, people choose to simply move the structure. It's less costly if they have the room. Instead of dealing with the rock, as we apply the concepts of mercy tonight, we'll be using this story that Christ has given us called the Good Samaritan. We may very well see during this study tonight that man's attitudes and behaviors are often based or derived from those man-made structures and those man-made teachings that may still be in the way. We may also see that men's hearts of stone are often possessed by those who refuse to invest the time and the labor that it takes to remove that stone. Beatitude captures what mercy should be in Matthew 5:7. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. What's a synonym that you can think of that's compatible with this notion of mercy? What's a synonym for the word mercy? We need to get this organized. The total disruption of everyone screaming at one time has got me confused. Love. Very good. Forgiveness. Compassion. Compassion, forgiveness, leniency, clemency, forbearance. Let's talk about credible mercy for just a second. Mike Rasnick steals Steve Ingram's car. I like Michael Rasnick, he's a friend of mine. And so, when he gets caught, and with your luck, Michael, I'm sorry, that's what would happen, we both know it. I would come to maybe testify on my friend's behalf as part of his past history of non-criminal behavior. This is an isolated event. You know how that goes. I wonder how Steve would feel if I came to court and testified that it was fine with me that Michael stole your car, and I wanted to come make sure that the judge knew that it's okay with me if you extend mercy in this instance. I'm not a victim, and this has cost me nothing. But I think it's important that you know that I would like to see some leniency toward my friend Michael. I can forgive him for stealing Steve Ingram's vehicle. How does that make Steve feel? That's an interesting concept, isn't it? So maybe we should spend our time talking about credible mercy originating from someone who has power, someone who has authority to punish, to harm, or to forgive. We'll use that for a definition as we move forward. As you know, in this story of the Samaritans, there's a real prejudice between two groups of people that are represented in this story. I would submit to you that the representation of the people that we will see eventually moving down this trail represent both the old and the new law. And that's why they were specifically chosen. They weren't chosen in random. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 42. In the time that Solomon reigned in Jerusalem, over all Jerusalem, this is before the divided kingdom, was some 40 years. And Solomon slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David his father, and Rehoboam his son reigned in his stead. The story of Rehoboam's rejection by the people due to his harshness ultimately led to the division of the kingdom, 1 Kings 12, verse 8. For he forsook the council. He forsook the counsel of the old men which they'd given him and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, right, which stood before him. That's where he got his advice. Eventually, attitudes and those concepts, like in verse 11 of 1 Kings 12, and now whereas my father did lay you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father hath chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. It was this type of attitude and some other influential factors that would lead to a divided kingdom. It would be 10 tribes in the north, and there would be 2 tribes in the south. And the tribes in the north would be referred to as Israel, and those in the south would be referred to as Judah. And as you know, and there's an application for where I'm going with this, the divided kingdoms did not stand. And you know that. The northern kingdom was eventually destroyed by Syria. The southern kingdom was destroyed by Babylon. And we've spent a lot of time studying that destruction. 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 20. And it came to pass, when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called unto him the congregation and made him king over all Israel. And there was none that followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah. The divided kingdom has its separate leaders now. I'm going to say one thing here and leave it for your consideration, then I'll move on. The separation of church and state probably started with rejection of the judges by the children of Israel and the claim for a king, a physical kingdom to rule them, so they could variate and deviate from the commandments of God, from Yahweh, that was based on the Mosaic standard in the Ten Commandments. There's probably some separation there where they wanted to get away from God and be like others. 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 25 through 33. And Jeroboam built Shechem in the Mount of Ephraim and dwelt therein and went out from thence and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. That's the southern kingdom. And if this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then all the heart of this people shall turn again unto their Lord, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go to Rehoboam. Verse 28, here we go again. Verse 28, you've heard this before. Wherefore the king took counsel and made 2 calves of gold and said unto them, it's too much for you to go to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Jerusalem, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Oh my. Do the same thing over and over and expect a different response. We know what that definition is, don't we? 1 Kings 12, 25 through 33, King Jeroboam lied to the children. He introduced idolatry, and it was in his own self-interest to preserve his kingdom. 1 Kings chapter 16. Verses 23 through 24. And in the 31st year of Asa king of Judah began Amra to reign over Israel. 12 years, 6 years reigned he in Tirzah. And he bought the hill of Samaria of Shemer for 2 talents of silver and built on the hill and called it the name of the city which he built after the name of Shemer, owner of the hill, Samaria. Thus the origin of the people from this territory that we will know as tonight as Samaritans. This is where their property, this is their origin, this is where they came from. In our terminology in the American experience, it would be newfound land. This is where they're from. 1 Kings chapter 12, back again, verse 8. Whoops, I'm sorry. Went the wrong way. My mistake. When the Assyrians defeated Israel, they only allowed the poor and the lowly to stay in the territory, which was the common practice of the conquerors. Why? The lowly people, the poor, they would allow them to stay in the territories. Why? They were not a threat. Number one, they were not a physical threat. The chance of an organized rebellion happening among the estimation of the conquering kingdom, these are a lowly esteemed people. We have taken those who have the gifts, who have the talents. We have taken those away. We've taken them off to our land to improve our land, to improve our kingdom. We're simply occupying the here. We want a minimum labor force present. And we want these people to not give us any problems. Exactly, Michael. They don't want any threats. So they leave the lowly, if you will, there for the poor, low esteemed in these areas. Well, they would allow migration. And by migration, most of that would be forced. So if they had conquering territories and they wanted the actual territories and do a total eviction, then some of those places, there would be migrations. And those immigrants, if you will, those refugees, may wind up in the same place. So the lowly of two conquering kingdoms were somewhat forced together, if you will, to live in this lowly environment. This is where the Samaritans came from. The intermarriages that happened because of these type situations, and they had a separate land. So now we have a general idea, and I'm sure most of you know that a lot better than I do, but that's a general idea. So as we step into this story, everything that we've discussed up to now existed and was known. So you got to understand that we did not come from the factory prejudice. Prejudice is learned behavior. It's something that we've decided that is worthwhile. It is something we've taken possession of as a character trait. And over a period of time, the laws of common sense will defeat it. But you got to stop it. Because if it's a character trait and I've taken possession of it, and I'm going to protect it because for whatever reason, it's ingrained, I've been taught that. Now let's look at this from the Jewish perspective. Could there be, in the story of the Good Samaritan, which eventually I'll get there if Mickey's hands don't move too fast on me, could there be any greater insult than to use a Samaritan as a hero in a parabolistic story? Not in that environment. I would say probably not. That was probably one of the most inflammatory things that Christ could have done, was to get to the story, to answer the lawyer, and to use a Samaritan as a hero, a most unlikely candidate to be used by the Messiah. John 4. John chapter 4, verses 5 through 9. Excuse me. And when he then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me to drink, for his disciples were gone away to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. I would suggest that from the origination under King Omri and the establishment of this kingdom, well, of Assyria, in this refugee land that the Samaritans would come from, that there has been a pretty good lapse of time. Would you agree? The scholars could probably get us within a few decades at least, maybe even closer, with historical events and kingdoms. But I want you to think about how this hate, how this disdain has been sustained all of these years. So there was more than one reason why the old law had to go. There's multiple examples of why the law had to go. Was this God's law or was this man's law? Some interesting comments in class, and I learned a lot about the notion of Pharisees and Sadducees. And if you go back into the first five books of the Old Testament and attempt to explore, you won't find those titles. At least I didn't. That's interesting how you can pull out the text, and like my daughter Rebecca used to say, Daddy, read the constructions. And you read the constructions, and when you look, you see there's this, and it's how did we get scribes? I know how we got scribes. How did we get Pharisees? How did we get Sadducees? How did we get these groups that were simply divided over the resurrection on the same court making decisions? How'd that happen? God didn't do that. I got an idea who did. So there are multiple reasons why the Old Testament, if you will, the old law, which God had given in perfection to man, had evolved into a burden that had lost its purpose. And that's why I decided to use the construction application of existing structures that had to go and stone that had to be dealt with. It was in the way of the foundation. It's got to go. There's some application, I think, maybe to those thoughts today. I'll leave that, I guess, up to you. This background is important. The Jews were prejudiced against the Samaritans, and that was sustained. Christ was not. Just before our Good Samaritan story, let's look at Luke 9, 51 through 55. And it came to pass when the time was come that he should be received up, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem and set messengers before his face. And they went in and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready, and they did not receive him. Now here in just a few short verses, this is going to be a representation of the hero in the story of the Good Samaritan. They rejected the Messiah. It's in Luke chapter 9. We just read it. And there's comments there about sons of thunder and how the apostles, two of them in particular, responded. And that's very good information, but it's really not necessary for our study. The point is that they were headed, or at least they were rejected, in this trip that they had planned. But yet, Christ used the Samaritan as an example of positive behavior in this story of the Good Samaritan. I thought that was quite interesting in and of itself. What does that tell me? It tells me he hadn't given up on them. He hadn't given up on them. Let's look at Luke 10. Luke chapter 10. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up. And the lawyer in this application was supposed to be an expert in the law. I'm going to say that maybe the same term, help me out here, the same term may be applicable to Gamaliel. Was he not wasn't that Saul of Tarsus' claim? I'm a Pharisee. I'm a Roman. I was raised in the strictest sect, right? A Hebrew of the Hebrews. Am I getting close, Louise? I'm getting close. Good. So when I think of this term in this application, lawyer, it's probably not like a lawyer that I would think about today. It's supposedly an expert in the old law. I would think of someone like Gamaliel. So this lawyer, this expert in the law, is going to be attempting to embarrass Christ and win an argument. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Verse 26. And he said unto him, What is written in the law? How readest thou? And he answering said, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. And he said, thou hast answered right. This do, and thou shalt live. Verse 29, but he willing to justify himself said unto Jesus, and who is my neighbor? The lawyer asked Christ, who is my neighbor? As we know both from study, the challenging Christ really was not a good idea. So the true expert in the law was there when the law was written. The true expert in science was present at creation. The true establisher of the New Testament was there before it was implemented, but it had been incepted. The Messiah knew Jeremiah 2, Joel 2, all the twos with the prophecy values. Very much aware of all those. So when the lawyer stepped into the ring, he stepped into the ring with the champion. So Christ could have used his knowledge, law, to publicly humiliate him. He chose not to do that. He chose to use a parable. He asked him, first of all, what do you read in the law? Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly. But then the lawyer comes back and says, who is my neighbor? And there it presents himself. Now we're in this political debate. Because if neighbor is everybody, that's not going to work under the Old Testament law, because Old Testament's not for everybody. This whole notion of the Mosaic law, the subsequent thing of Christianity, which we will say after conversion requires circumcision. It's a big argument about that. I recall reading something about that. So if you're going to say that neighbors are everyone, then there's just going to be a problem, and I'll just let you ease into that, if that's what you want to do. Wow. Let's look at verse 30. And Jesus answered, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed him, leaving him half dead. Obviously, the road from Jerusalem to Jericho posed a threat. The thieves robbed the man and left him for dead after wounding him. What nationality do you suspect, if you have any suspicions, on who this victim might be? The commentary that I used references it's a Jew. It's a person we would call a child of God, the children of Israel, if you will. Now, you know where we're going. If we qualify that and keep that in our minds, the person that's the hero of the story is not the person lying beside the road to walk around. If that's a Hebrew and you're a Hebrew, that's your brother. So that's really going to be an offense, is it not? Under the old law? Verses 31 through 32. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise the Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. Why? Why in the world would you not have mercy? And some of you, you know, maybe in situations like, you know, I've been in at work and I've seen countless numbers of victims. And some of the injury is not bad, and some of the injury is incapacitating, and some of the injury includes death. But to be able to look upon that, especially a person abandoned, a person without the means to defend or provide or have any means to resist another attack, and not only do you walk by, you kind of measly over to the other side of the road. Is that pretty bad? Was that a violation of the Old Testament law? Exodus 23. Exodus 23, verses 4 and 5. And if thou meet thine enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, thou shalt surely bring it back to him. And if thou see the donkey of him that hateth thee lying under his burden and wouldn't forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help with him. You're to help your neighbor with his donkey. So I would say, yeah, there's probably a pretty good chance that you should show mercy to your fellow children of Israel, your fellow Hebrew, if you will. Would you agree with that? Is that going too far? Let's go back to Luke 10. Let's go back to Luke 10. Whoops. A certain priest, verse 31, and by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed on the other side. Verse 32, and likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. I want you to consider that as a possible random sampling of Christ's attitude on the effectiveness of the old law when it came to touching men's hearts. Very good with the month of Abril. Very much with the year of Jubilee. Very much with keeping of feasts and Passovers. Very much with the mechanical sacrifices. Very much with those. But those who are representative of that law in leadership positions during that time, including the keeper of the temple, that's the rock I've been talking about. That's not under construction. That rock hasn't been uncovered yet, much less addressed. But Christ uncovers it. Verse 33, but a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. He had mercy on him. Wow. Very much an insulting remark to make, especially to this probably doctor, if I can use that term, of the law. And his compassion not only touched him to stop, but it moved him to action. Verses 34 through 36, and he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn, and he took care of him. And on the morrow when he departed, he took out 2 pence and gave them to the host and said unto them, take care of him. And whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, will I pay thee. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor, which was the original question, neighbor, to him that fell among the thieves? What is Christ's motive using this parable? We have that 20/20 vision. They didn't go to the local Books a Million and pick up the English Standard Version, pick up the New King James. We have that 20/20 option because it's all recorded for us, and we sit here in a nice place and we kind of review these things. Sir.
You know, we've all seen the news lately. Maybe there's a car wreck and some total strangers go over. Maybe the car's catching on fire that's been involved in the wreck, and a total stranger goes over. Basically risks their life to get the people out, or they've turned over in the creek or whatever. But I think there's 2 factors that come in. It's how you were raised. Maybe you're not really friends with somebody or some group of people, but I've seen some interviews with people where they've said, well, why did you do that? And they said, well, I really didn't think. I just knew that somebody needed help, and I had the ability go help. And then I did.
I would agree. I agree. Can you imagine in this story how this priest and this Levite were raised? Yes, especially the one of the tribe of Levite. They were raised ministering and learning what their job responsibilities would be if they were men, and I'm assuming it was. They knew full well what their responsibilities were. These sacrifices have to be done this way. I have to look like this. We have gatekeepers and guards. We have people that are here. I'm not allowed to go anywhere near these separating devices, these curtains. I'm not allowed to go back there even though I'm a Levite. I can't go back there. What was the purpose of all that? The purpose of all that was teaching that approaching your Creator was something you didn't do halfway. It was something that you considered, and only the ones that were chosen were allowed to directly approach, and God got to establish who those chosen people are. You gonna let me do currency with that? Past and current? Yes, please. Okay.
And so they could have been thinking of themselves for a long time.
That's an interesting point. Her point was, is that had these members of the tabernacle, of the temple, if you will, had they touched this body, had he been dead, and he very well may have thought he was, that's a good point. They would have been, quote, ceremonially unclean. So ministering to that person was not as important as maintaining your religious status, another failure of the law. And we got to remember that our victim, there's nothing that tells us that our victim was the Samaritan. Our victim was not a Samaritan, correct? We all agree with that? And that's one of the things that we build, that we think about along the way. They must have really hated this person to walk around this person. There's huge indication that the person that's being walked around is a Hebrew. He's coming from Jerusalem toward Jericho. Please.
Well, I think of it from the opposite standpoint, that the Samaritan was even braver because he was not supposed to approach a Jew. And even though
good point.
He was injured, he was still going, I'm going to say doubly, because he was supposed to stay away from those people, and the fact that he was willing to risk his own, say, freedom or whatever you want to say by approaching a Jew, even to help him.
Her point was is that he was making a mistake in the eyes of the Jewish law as a Samaritan getting that close to a Hebrew. And plus we have to remember that this little strip of road, or maybe it's a long strip of road, is a place inhabited by thugs. And that's who they are in this story. And so when a target of opportunity presents itself, that's what they do. Verse 37. And he said, "He that showed mercy on him." Then said Jesus to him, "Go and do thou likewise." The one who had mercy was the just one. The priest and the Levite, very possibly in this story, represent the failures of the Old Testament law, as the mechanical applications, the keeping of feasts, the sacrifices, and all the ceremonies, the hand cleaning, the lighting, all of those things that were in place were there as a memorial. It was there as a time of remembering Yahweh. It was a time to remember the Passover. It was a time to remember those things. There's a lesson in this for me. I hope there's one in this for you. Those mechanical steps being checked off on my clipboard is not spiritual compliance. So I'm OCD. I've got my yearly planners probably for 6 or 7 years in my left drawer. I wrote down what I did, and when I did end of the month summaries, I checked them off. And I'm so proud. I want to bring my planners home and put them on the fridge, and there's a member of management that says, no, I'm not going to do that. Okay? And so I have a tendency to be very OCD. I know you're shocked. I have a tendency to be that way myself. So the purpose of the law to show care and love for the fellow man had given way to the ceremony, had given way to the religious ceremonies and the positions of the day. Now Christ, in our time, represents the victim. He was the one who was hated. He was the one who was challenged. Christ also is a representation of the Good Samaritan, because he was the one in this time, our time, who shows mercy. Spiritually, that's us. That's us lying afflicted by the wages of sin. And while other men and men would walk by us, Christ will not. Christ will stop. And Christ will help. And it's motivated by compassion and mercy. Christ is the just one, and his followers who will. Hosea 6:4. Find it. O Ephraim, what will I do unto thee? O Judah, what shall I do unto thee? For your goodness is as a morning cloud, and as the early dew, it goeth away. Isn't that interesting? O Ephraim, what will I do unto thee? O Judah, what shall I do unto thee? For your goodness, King James Version says goodness, is a morning cloud, and as the early dew, it goeth away. Goodness will not last. Teaching points. Margaret Thatcher is quoted as saying once, you would never remember the story of the Good Samaritan had he only intent. I thought that was pretty good. There's some challenges in this story I'm hoping that we might consider tonight. The first one is the willingness to get involved. The willingness simply to get involved. Maybe not in something as dramatic or traumatic as someone actually being injured, but someone spiritually afflicted. We saw that this Samaritan ministered to those who had no use for him. So he ignored prejudice. It didn't matter to him that other people hated him. He had an opportunity to do good, so he just went ahead and did it. What a lesson. He used his time and he used his wealth to promote the cause of caring for the victim. He used his time and his wealth to care for that victim, which was his intended purpose. He had credibility with this innkeeper, and I thought that was pretty interesting. In the story, when the Good Samaritans paid the bill, if you will, he told the innkeeper, care for him, and if there's any more due when I come back, I will pay you. I will reward you. I will compensate you. And the innkeeper apparently is fine with that. So the most unlikely candidate to be of virtue, to be recognized as good, this Samaritan, obviously has credibility with this innkeeper in this story. Right? He knows he's good for it. He's credible. And there are several character traits that go with keeping and developing credibility. I thought that was interesting. Teaching point number 5, was that he was generous. He was generous with what he had. The mercy, that the responsibility for the mercy that the Good Samaritan displayed was not his first responsibility. It was the responsibility of the first one that saw that there was a need. That responsibility was not addressed. The second opportunity presents the second responsibility, the Levite, the keeper of the temple or the tabernacle. It became his responsibility when he became aware that there was a need. And when he simply walked on by, he evaded his responsibility. Society, bosses, people in positions of supervision, they can make us pay what we do at work and they can make us pay for what we do not do, but they cannot make us responsible. These are highly esteemed members of the Old Testament law. What good? It was serving them, and they were not serving their fellow man. What good? God is love. The keeper of his temples are not. Wow. Wow. So if we have maybe an unmerciful attitude, maybe we ought to give a little bit of consideration to excavation. Not archaeological excavation. Dirt moving, interstate building, barn burning, stump hauling. The real rough work. And I've done some of that. I grew up in a construction company. And I've done some of that. And it's very, very, very disturbing. But once the construction process gets underway, when you've burned one tank of fuel in a dozer, everybody knows you've been there. The ground is instantly changed, and you know that you've been there. And then there's that rock. So if I have that rock of prejudice, hate, something along those lines, what have I done with it? Did I move the structure? That's the first response. We were digging the footers for the house and we ran into limestone rock. What are we going to do? He owns 3 acres. We're moving the house. Cover that basement up. We can do that, I guess, in a spiritual sense. That rock's still there. So when we go somewhere else and start a new structure, the original design is compromised. The first step, we're not where we're supposed to be in the original design. So the first harmful event's not addressing that rock. I hope that you've gotten something out of this lesson. I know I got a lot out of this lesson preparing for it and looking at it from different perspectives. I appreciate you coming out this evening. We'll have a closing prayer, and you all will be dismissed. So thank you.